All right, David Quinn done on Broadway, and the North Division playoff matchups are now set. It's the Wednesday edition of Hockey Central here on Sportsnet 590. The Fan once again filling in for Jeff Merrick. I'm Nick Alberga, joined alongside Justin Bourne and Anthony Stewart on Twitter, at the Golden Muzzy, at JT Bourne, at Stu Monroe, producer Matt Marchese, technical ops Dylan Brown and Lance Kennedy along for the ride as well. So it's all systems go for the North Division in the Stanley Cup playoffs, Leafs, Habs, Oilers, Jets. We'll get a Winnipeg perspective in about 30 from now with Sportsnet's Ken Wiebe. Big win last night, even if it came against Vancouver, I get it. Game 1,000 for Paul Stastny. Ken has a fantastic piece on this available right now on Sportsnet.ca, so make sure to check it out. But undoubtedly, guys, all eyes on the state of New York, if you know what I'm saying. Big news out of Broadway today. David Quinn fired by the New York Rangers. How shocked are you, Borny?
You know what? I am a little bit surprised. You know, yep. Drury had the tie with Quinn in the past, and you know, by all accounts, he's done a pretty nice job with the Rangers team that, when he took over, was not in the business of winning. You know, essentially, they knew they weren't going to be great. They knew they had a long way to go, and you know, I thought he had nicely oversaw the turnaround, and things seem to be trending in the right direction. You know, they're by far the best team to not make playoffs this year, particularly if you look at goal differential. So I'm not sure what was expected of him that made him not good enough, but I understand that sometimes guys just want to put in their own guy, and a fresh start may be needed. But still, I thought Quinn did an admirable job with the Rangers.
Yeah, you hate to see anyone ever lose their job, but, you know, kudos to Chris Drury, because usually you only get so many lifelines as a coach and one of them, as a GM, and one of them is firing the coach. And for him to use that right away, he could have done that easily after next year or a year and a half down the line. So that just shows the commitment to, putting his personal touch on this Ranger team. Drury means business, and I'm sure he's going to go with the guy that he believes can come and do the job right away, because I think the fans in, New York deserve a winner right away. He's going to do everything he can to do that, for the New York Rangers.
Look, I chalk this up to Dolan being Dolan. We've seen it in the NBA with the New York Knicks before. I think as soon as we saw the news come out last week, you know, Jeff Gordon and John Davidson, you know, we pretty much knew the writing was on the wall, you would think, you know, certainly in this situation here for David Quinn. And so they'll go about their business, try to find somebody else. But it's just like, you know, am I missing something with this season with the New York Rangers? Because I think you guys hit the nail on the head. Any other division, and again, you can use that, you know, that game for a variety of different divisions and teams in this league. But any other division, the New York Rangers probably make the Stanley Cup playoffs. And there's a lot of people out there, it's not just me, who feel this team is on the upward trajectory and actually had a pretty decent season, Borny.
Yeah, I think, you know, the Dolan call is a good one. He obviously has his hands in this somewhat. I think probably the black mark on Quinn was that he seemed willing to go along with the plan of speed and skill and, you know, try to win a different way. It really feels like there's this sort of thirst from the top to become a different type of team. Like the 6-1 loss the Rangers had to the Islanders did not sit well with Dolan by all accounts, and the Tom Wilson scenario. Like they just weren't the team mm-hmm. he wanted them to be in terms of style, and I guess they see Quinn as a reflection of that and just want to start over more in the mold of what he thinks the Rangers should be.
Is it outlandish?
Yeah, I'm not too sure about that. Like
mm-hmm. Go ahead.
Go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, like, in terms of, you know, people who could be in line for this vacancy, of course, there's a variety of different teams looking for a coach now. Buffalo saying they're going to interview some candidates earlier today. Arizona, Seattle, Columbus. Dare I say John Tortorella could be in the running to return to the Big Apple, Stewie?
Well, you didn't see my tweet about connecting the dots. Did you
did,
not see Scott O'Neill, who was the assistant
yes.
coach for him there, too? So the good thing is there's a lot of quality candidates out there, and I'm not sure if this group really needs a John Tortorella-type coach. They got a lot of young guys that are finding their way throughout the league, and them getting benched or sitting for periods of time is not really going to help, too. So I think the one good thing is that there's a lot of quality coaches, and whoever they decide, it's going to be a high-quality candidate for sure.
I thought you were linking to Max Afinaganov or something, but that does make sense. And,
yeah, I'm like, what is that? What are you talking about?
it was Aleš Kotelík and Max Afinaganov who was also involved in that tweet, but I know where you're going with that. And certainly it's always interesting to look at it from that perspective, the musical chairs when it comes to coaching. It's like you're hired to be fired. You know, the one thing I loved, guys, about David Quinn is that he wasn't afraid to challenge his players. He didn't care who you were. If you were a Artemi Panarin, you know, or anybody else on that roster for that matter, Mika Zibanejad. It didn't matter. If you didn't do what he was looking for, you were not going to be in the lineup. And he wasn't afraid to call some guys out and bench them. And I think you need accountability in this day and age. And I truly do feel like David Quinn is an excellent coach. I thought he was a great fit with the New York Rangers. But again, I just chalk it up to Dolan. And then I wonder too, like, who wants this job? Is this like, you know, the job that everybody would want right now in terms of openings in this league, Borny?
I mean, I understand Dolan's a bit of a burden, but like, who wants to be the head coach of the New York Rangers? Everyone.
Yeah.
You know, that's a unique, special opportunity, and I'm sure David Quinn feels like it was taken from him too quick. You know, we had him on our show, and, mm-hmm. and he said, like, every day going into Madison Square Garden is like a holy crap, like, this is amazing type of thing, and, you know, kind of never get over that. So certainly a highly desired position. My thought right off the bat is like, all right, if they want someone who's a little bit hard-nosed or harder working to change the tone and the culture there a little bit, how about a guy like Rick Tocchet? Like, Rick Tocchet has left the Arizona Coyotes, and it just makes a lot of sense in terms of, you know, the personality and that he brings. You know, if you want your team to play in the image of someone, he's a guy who gets that out of his teams, and he just hasn't had the horses in Arizona. Might be a really nice fit for the Rangers.
Stewie, would you like to piggyback off that? I know it's really a bit difficult. Yeah,
we had a standoff there, and you won. Okay, so I think we're sort of losing the bigger picture here. That, you know, as much as Dolan is the owner there, I think he doesn't really know the hockey side of things, and he's sort of you know laying his faith in Glenn Sather too. So I think it comes down to a trust factor. Whoever trusts Jury as the GM, that's really going to come in here, so they don't really have to watch their back too. So that's why I said there's probably going to be a connection to someone that Jury either played with or played for over the years, that's probably going to take this job.
And coaches David Oliver, Jacques Martin, and Greg Brown were also relieved of their duties. So something to look forward to over the next couple months. Certainly the teams that aren't in the Stanley Cup playoffs have some big-time decisions. I mentioned Seattle as well, still looking for a head coach. And Gerard Gallant will be going over to Latvia to coach Team Canada, who put out their roster earlier today. So watch out for that. But certainly in Canada, guys, we're beyond pumped. We finally know our matchups. The King of the North, Anthony Stewart, with your billion predictions in the preseason, midseason, all season long, we finally figure out who are going to play in the playoffs. And Stewie, we'll start with you. The first time since 1979, the Maple Leafs, the Montreal Canadiens will square off in the playoffs. What do you make of that?
Yeah, I think it's going to be a big, really good series. And, you know, for the people out there that think it's going to be a cakewalk, it's not. You know, the playoffs are all about defense and goaltending. And if Carey Price comes back, you know, he's one of the top goalies in the league when it comes to playoff hockey. And they have some really solid defense with Weber when he's back, Sherratt, Edmondson, and Jeff Petrie, too. So I think Toronto now, they have to play to their strengths. They can't really leave it to chance and you know, try to rely on the power play to win them a series, because it's sort of been struggling as of late as well, too. So I think with Toronto, they have the edge and skill. I think Montreal, they're really going to have to take it to the streets and play a physical game. You're going to have to get Corey Perry in their kitchen. You're going to have to get Josh Anderson playing physical. I think all things have to go right for Montreal to have a chance, but I think it's going to be a lot closer than people think.
Yeah, it's going to be fun. I mean, this is something everyone's been waiting for a long, long time in both Toronto and Montreal. You know, history will be made here. We got a proper best of seven series. So love the matchup, mostly because, you know, Montreal's not out of it. Like, certainly the better team here, I think. I don't even think Montreal fans at this point would argue that Toronto is the better team. But this season is over, and playoffs are a whole new one. And as Stewie said, you get Price back. But also, you get arrested Brendan Gallagher back, and he is going to be a bear to play against in a series like this. He loves high stakes. He's going to be great. You know, Shea Weber comes back. He's healthy. And then if those guys are there, that's the tent poles of their team. Then they just need the depth to be solid, and we know they've got a ton of that. So Montreal's, they got a good group, and if they're healthy in playoffs, you know, they're going to be as hearted out as anyone in this North Division.
Yeah, number one, respect your opponent. And I like that we're all bringing that up, because you're right. It doesn't matter who you're playing. You have to respect your opponent. And you know Montreal is going to be game. How many, you know, we've seen this in the entirety of this original six rivalry. It doesn't matter where these two teams are in the standings. When they play each other, it's always a really, really good matchup. So I'm right there with you guys. First meeting since 1979, the 16th playoff series. You know, it's important to mention, too, the Maple Leafs haven't won a round in 17 years. So they're in dire need of that. And they did pretty well against Montreal, of course, in the regular season, guys. You know, they won 7 of those 10, 7-2-1 in that stretch. But I do think the biggest key, and we talked about this a bit yesterday, for Montreal is playing that tight-checking, low-scoring type game, you know, similar to what Columbus did. And you need goaltending. But you can make that case for every team around this league come Stanley Cup playoff time, no?
Yeah, it's certainly the wild card for all the Canadian teams in particular is goaltending. Like, Connor Hellebuck won a Vezina trophy. If he's good, Winnipeg's good. You know, if Price can be great or Allen can go on a run, they're great. Who knows what Toronto's got going on in their crease. Like, it, you know, and Mike Smith is maybe the best goaltender in the Canadian division heading into the postseason, which is an insane thing to say. You know, so it's just it's a totally different year. And goaltending is obviously at the heart of it all in hockey. So a lot of pressure on those guys in the weeks ahead.
Let's put a bow on this, Nick, here. Let's get right down to the predictions here. Nitty gritty here. Oh. I say Toronto in five and a half. Toronto in 5.5.
I'm going to go Toronto in 6.
Cowardly half.
I'm going to go Toronto in 6. How about you, Borny?
Yeah, listen, like my gut says Toronto in 5, but my sports radio person knows to protect myself and say Toronto in 6, but I can't bring myself to do it because Stewie called the 5.5. So I'm just going to say in 5 because that's truly what I think will end up happening.
Triple OT game 5.
There's your series where Austin Matthews wins it. You know, I'm sure you guys, you know, grew up in the same era. Like, Montreal and Toronto was big for me, and I get it. Maybe it's a bit different for me considering, you know, I'm from Quebec. Stewie, you are as well, and I was never really a Montreal Canadiens fan growing up, but how do we get that rivalry back? Does this go a long way, guys, do you think, in establishing that rivalry once again, Toronto and Montreal, whether it be in the regular season or the playoffs? Or is it just one of those things that these two teams just haven't been particularly good in, say, the last 20 years?
Yeah, that's it, right? I think that's the answer. It's just like, be good. You know, we got a good Toronto team. We need to time it, sync it up with a good Montreal team. Never feels like they're headed in the same direction at the same time. So I don't believe, you know, you might get some short-term hostilities if you have like a couple of guys who hate each other and, you know, a year or two, there's a nice flare-up or something. For any sort of consistency to reignite it all, it's just have the teams be good. So if this thing goes 7 games, I think you'll want to stay off the internet if you're a fan.
I guarantee you after game 1 it's going to be trending all over Canada. Something's going to happen at the end. Someone's going to run the goalie, or there's going to be a big brawl, and I think that rivalry is going to be united and ignited after game 1 for sure.
Hashtag it's on. The other series here in the North Division, and again, Ken Wiebe of Sportsnet coming up in about 15 minutes or so to break down the Winnipeg perspective, who are slowly starting to find their game, but I wonder still without Nikolaj Ehlers and Adam Lowry, the concerns with that team. But it's Edmonton against Winnipeg, and we know the storied history between Winnipeg and Edmonton and those two cities. These two franchises haven't played in the playoffs together. Of course, a second iteration here of the Winnipeg Jets, but you know, nonetheless, guys, I think the story in this series, and Borny, we can start with you, has to be the name Connor, right? Connor Hellebuck for the Winnipeg Jets has to stand on his head. Goes without saying Connor McDavid, and I guess we can throw Kyle Connor in that conversation as well, right?
Yeah, that's a nice tie there. I don't, you know, I'm having a tough time assessing what the Oilers are, because like they just roughen up the Vancouver Canucks, who are pretty much done. So they look great of late, but tough to really know exactly what you're going to get from them. It's the formula is not impossible to figure out with Edmonton. It's like limit the damage the two guys do and take advantage of their weaker defense. So this is not a foregone conclusion. As poor as Winnipeg's been for a stretch, like I still look at both these rosters and think, tell you what, I prefer Winnipeg. I understand how the, you know, the second half of the season has gone, but I still prefer Winnipeg. So I don't think this thing's done. I do expect this series to go deeper. I, you know, 6 or 7 games one way or the other.
Yeah, I know Hellebuck's done well as of late. He's got 2 shutouts his last 5 starts. But I think this is going to really expose the lack of, you know, attention to details at the deadline by the Winnipeg Jets and not really getting a shutdown defenseman. I know they got Jordy Benn, but can he really, you know, do a job on Connor McDavid? So that's why I'm, you know, is interested to see why they didn't go out and get Alexiak or someone and sort of bet the farm on getting some shutdown guys, because the only way that you have a chance is by shutting down McDavid. And you look what he's done the last 15, 20 games of the season, it's going to be really, really tough. But, you know, if you get into a run-and-gun game, I don't really like their chances as well. They're going to have Hellebuyck stand on his head, and you've got to find a way to shut down McDavid, which at this point looks near to impossible.
It does. And, you know, you look back even like in the last month and a half, how much the narrative has changed, because we've known for pretty much a while it was probably going to be these four teams and likely Toronto, Montreal, Edmonton, and Winnipeg. But maybe a month and a half ago, we were talking about Winnipeg being maybe an upper echelon team in this division, in this league, in this conference. And then next thing you know, you lose Nikolai Ehlers, Connor Hellebuyck has a couple stinkers, and McDavid goes on the heater of the century. And I don't know what the odds are going into this series just yet. I really haven't looked, but you would have to think, Borny, that the Oilers are the definitive favorite, right?
I mean, I understand why they would be perceived that way, but yeah, mm-hmm. I just don't think they are.
Yeah.
You know, the other thing we talked about with the Winnipeg Jets this year is depth. You know, I understand Lowry's been out at times, and you know, but that third line when he's in with Kopp and Appleton, you know, some of their guys down the lineup up front are so, so good. And that really should be a place where they can exploit the Oilers. You know, they should be able to win their shifts when Connor McDavid is not on the ice. And, you know, finding a way to convert those to goals may be the difference in the series. Because if they're able to get some offense down there, I don't trust Edmonton's ability to match that offense from the bottom half of their forward group.
Well, the Oilers got a real deal on the third line right now. He's playing some decent hockey, but I think the difference between this team from last year is their tertiary guys are stepping up a little bit more than they did last year. Chiasson is playing not bad. Archibald's playing some half decent hockey. They got McLeod coming up from the minors doing a good job. Devin Shore's been chipping in. And so I think as long as the bottom six does their job and not be dash six in the series, I could see Edmonton winning this in five or six games. What's your predictions, Nick? Let's go. We're going predictions all show. Let's go.
Yeah, no, that's fair. That's fair, because we're getting closer to the postseason starting on. Wow, I love the intensity from Stewie today. I'm siding more with Borny, because I've liked Winnipeg from the beginning. I think losing Nikolai Ehlers has been big for that team. I think he was a monster this season. I'm intrigued to see playoff Pierre-Luc Dubois. Like, I think he's really starting to find his footing with that team, and I think he's huge to have in a playoff setting. And I do think Winnipeg is going to be a team that people sleep on. So give me Winnipeg in seven games. How about you, Borny?
Yeah, that's what I've got too. Winnipeg in seven games. Stewie, you doing anything different?
I'm going Oilers in six. And I will preface this by saying I did predict Oilers to win the Cup last year. So
I did that 2 years ago and felt the wrath of Oilers Nation for that. Speaking of which, guys, we turn our focus now to the 23-game absence for Freddie Anderson. Will start tonight for the Maple Leafs in Canada. Hasn't played since March 19th due to a knee injury, of course, but he played a game and a half with the Marlies, stopped 46 shots of 52. Borny, what's your expectation? What do you want to see from Freddie Anderson tonight in Ottawa?
Well, one thing we can't get too caught up in is actual goals against. Like, if there's a couple tip pucks home or something, it's like you can't be all over Freddie. I think you just need to see that he's moving, that he's engaged, that there isn't a bunch of softies going in. You know, I understand that, it's been a tough go for him and finding his movement and just trying to see him look like he looked like in the past. So a lot of that will be up to Steve Briere, the goalie coach for the Toronto Maple Leafs, to assess, to see where he's at. But, you know, from Freddie too. So if he goes in, he's moving well and he says he feels pretty good. Steve Briere likes him. Freddie says he feels good. Like, I think this is a guy we're going to see in the playoffs, and he's going to be an important part of the team before the playoffs is all said and done.
Yeah, coming from a guy that's played in the minors, they call it the jungle for a reason, because guys are just flying around, and it's actually harder to play in the American League than it is in the National Hockey League. So I think the only assessment for Freddie going down to the minors is how he's feeling after the games, too. And I'd be worried about him now coming up and getting shell-shocked. But this Leaf team, compared to last year, they do a pretty good job when they need to insulate their goaltending and not give up really too many high-danger chances. So right now, at this point, I think the only assessment should be, is he feeling good? How is he after the game? Does he need to get on the table for too long? Because I think he's well rested, and I think he'll be ready to go a lot sooner than people think.
And we'll laugh, like, I do think it is a pivotal moment in the later stretch of this season for the Maple Leafs, because I think you guys are so right. Like, you need more than one guy come the Stanley Cup playoffs, and again, we touched on this yesterday, but you're going to need more than Jack Campbell. Like, I think we all agree Jack Campbell starts game one and he is confirmed as a starter for Friday in Winnipeg in the season finale, but I think it sets him up to start game one. But you need both guys, because how many times in recent postseasons, guys, have we seen a quick hook, you know, where we think the number one guy's in there, he lets a couple softies early on, he's done, and then they ride the hot hand, right, Boyne?
Yeah, well, you don't have time to let a guy find his game in the playoffs, so it's key. You know, if it looks like he's not going to be there, given his best, that you get that sorted out quickly. But at the same time, you got to manage egos a little bit too. And you know, it would be tough to see Jack Campbell go on a huge run here, 17-2-2 with the Leafs, gets the starter's job, starts the game, and a couple go in, and they say, "No, we don't believe in you anymore." You know, so I think it's important that they. You know, they're able to find a measure of you know, patience with him. I think if you play well enough, long enough, you earn yourself a bit of a longer leash.
Yeah, and it usually starts, and there's usually a precursor until a guy gets pulled. It's not like he's great one game, and then all of a sudden he's letting in 7-8 goals. Usually it's a couple of bad practices, or, you know, mentally he's not there too. But let's not, you know, mistake it. Jack Campbell's earned his opportunity just based on his play. You know, he had a bad dip for about a week or so, but he responded really, really well, and the numbers don't lie. So he's earned the opportunity, and he'd have to put together a couple of bad games or bad periods in a row. But just the way that he's been playing so far, I don't really see that happening, you know, in the first round at all.
So two games remaining in this season, guys, and already confirmed that Nick Foligno and Justin Hall will play tonight. A couple things on that, and I'm curious to get your perspective, guys, about Nick Foligno. Like, I think it's likely tonight we'll see some reps for Nick Foligno, playing with Tavares and Nylander. Do you like that fit more than the top line? Because as we saw from the lines at practice, guys, it sounds like maybe Zach Hyman could start back on that top line with Matthews and Marner.
Go ahead, Stu. I'll let you run with this one first.
Yeah, I'll take this. And when people are assessing him on that line with Tavares and Nylander, you shouldn't be going by his numbers. You should be going by the play of Tavares and Nylander as line mates. And I think when, you know, they were together, Nylander really came out of his shell and started playing some good hockey. So my timeline could be a little bit off, but I remember that, you know, JT and Willie were playing some really, really good hockey, because Nick Foligno, he's a facilitator. He gets in the corners. He does almost what Zach Hyman would do on that top line too. So he doesn't play without him, you know, without out of his own comfort zone too. So I would see him staying there just because Tavares and Nylander are playing good hockey with him on that left flank.
I've liked the idea of Foligno playing with Tavares and Nylander. I just think it makes you trust that line a little bit more, where you may have some doubts with Willie, and maybe that doesn't mean you specifically, but it does mean the head coach. So if you feel like they're a little bit more defensively stout with Nick Foligno with that group, I would think that would be something that could keep Tavares and Nylander on the ice more and give them the chance to use their offense. So, you know, the other thing is just, I don't want Nick Foligno to play an insane amount of minutes. Like, the appeal of having him here is very real. I think he checks a lot of boxes for what the Leafs need, but I do think you have to be wary of, like, overvaluing what you've traded for. Like, the Foligno's effective on a Columbus against the Leafs because he plays 17 minutes effectively. You know, if you get the TOI too high on a guy like Foligno, even though I want him on that top line, I still think you need to be a little bit careful about how many times you're throwing him over the boards.
Yeah, spread them out for sure, and certainly I think that'll be the things to monitor over the last couple games of this regular season. And I wonder what goes down on Friday, because you see last night Boston and Washington, I think something like 20 regulars were out of the lineup, and I wonder what kind of roster the Maple Leafs ice on Friday, and Winnipeg for that matter, knowing that they have their first round matchup set. And on top of that, I'll ask you the question, and Stewie, you can start with you when it comes to rest. Where do you sit? I know there's just two games left. Would you sit Matthews down for a game, John Tavares down for a game, or just make them go out there and do their thing?
So you're saying we're going to see Denny Malgin and Marty Nurin,
Gino
your
Malgin.
Favorite defenseman. Is that true?
Well, that's my expectation.
I would leave it up to the players. I would leave it up to the players. And for me, I was a guy, I hate being rested because it reminded me of being in the press box. And I hate being in the press box. And the real grind of the National Hockey League, I always talk about it. It's not the games. The game is the easy part. It goes by quick. It's not really too hard on the body. It's the practice, the video, being in the gym, being at the rink all day. So I think the players, they want to play games because it keeps them, you know, engaged. And what you don't want now is guys, you know, sitting back, you know, resting on their laurels. And then now it takes them a couple games to get back into, you know, game shape too. So for me, I like playing. I like practicing all the time. And I think some of the top guys, you'll see some with the option and some that will prefer to play as well.
Borny? All right, we'll hit the break. Coming up here, Ken Weeb of Sportsnet to cover the Winnipeg Jets' perspective as they get set for the Edmonton Oilers, and that's a very, very tall task considering the way Connor McDavid has been playing as of late. But great news in Connor Hellebuyck, a really, really steady performance last night as we look forward to that series. It's Nick Alberga, Justin Bourne, and Anthony Stewart here on Hockey Central on Sportsnet 590 The Fan. All right, back here on Hockey Central as we inch closer and closer to the Stanley Cup playoffs. And as we speak right now, still don't have a firm indication of when the North Division will get underway. But we do know the matchups, the Maple Leafs and the Montreal Canadiens, and of course the Edmonton Oilers and the Winnipeg Jets. It's Nick Alberga, Justin Bourne, and Anthony Stewart here on Hockey Central as we're happy to bring in now Ken Weeb of Sportsnet out in Winnipeg to break down this series, break out this this recent run for the Winnipeg Jets, and they're getting back to health, which is excellent news. And Ken, thanks so much for doing this. You know, how crucial was that sort of a building block victory last night for Winnipeg against Vancouver?
Yeah, thanks for having me, first and foremost, Nick. For sure. I mean, we know this, there's been an emotional toll on the Jets lately, of course, losing 9 of 10 before that game. Blake Wheeler saying after the game it was one of the most adverse situations he's been in through his entire career. So there was a lot of bit of stress and angst in the fan base, but Jets got those good feelings back by putting up 5. I mean, their biggest issue of late had been goal scoring, only 17 goals in the previous 10 games. So when you can put up a 5 spot, I think there's a little bit of confidence in terms of the offensive game.
Ken, thanks for joining us. What is the story with the Jets' health? Ehlers, Hellebuyck, we expected to see a relatively healthy Jets team at some point in the playoffs?
Yeah, no doubt about that, Justin. I mean, I guess the only question mark right now, I think, is Nikolaj Ehlers. He has been back skating, but he hasn't been shooting yet. We expect it's a shoulder issue that he's been dealing with after that series of collisions with Joe Thornton in that meeting with the Leafs. But otherwise, Adam Lowry's been back for 5 games, and Connor Hellebuyck made it quite clear with 2 shutouts in his last 3 games. You know, he sloughed off his hand issue last night, saying it was not a mild sprain, but a mild jam. That was his physician's hat that he put on when I asked him about it. But Hellebuyck getting back to form is the biggest development for the Jets, obviously, guys. You touched on it. Lots of questions in the North Division in terms of the goaltending. It's a great goaltending matchup. Mike Smith has been fabulous against the Jets this year and against most teams, but he's really had their number. And the other thing that Smith has done well is he's impeded the Jets' forecheck with his puck handling ability. The Jets have had an awfully tough time generating a lot of sustained zone time because of that puck handling ability that Smith has.
So with them slated to play the Edmonton Oilers, do you think they really did enough at the deadline to really try to slow down and stop Connor McDavid? I know it's tough to stop him, but do you think they could have added maybe another top 4 defenseman to really try to go above and beyond this season, being in the North Division?
Yeah, Stewie, I know. Obviously, we know Kevin Cheveleyev was certainly making a lot of calls, and we know Matthias Ekholm and Jamie Oleksiak and Josh Manson were among the targets, but ultimately none of those guys left, and their availability was kind of in question. So definitely the Jets know they need to be better as a 5-man defensive unit. They're in sort of an under-the-radar kind of group, but Josh Morrissey has really elevated his game of late on the back end, and Neil Pionk has done a pretty good job against Connor McDavid over the course of the year, although we know that McDavid has been dominant against everybody, and the Jets were no exception. 22 points for McDavid against the Jets in 9 multi-point games, but they're going to have to do it as a collective group. We know that the Jets are known for elite-level goaltending and depth up front, as Justin touched on, but their team defense is going to be critical against the Oilers for sure. But to answer your question, they did not do enough, but I don't think it was for lack of trying.
Ken Weber, guests here on Hockey Central, Nick Alberga, Justin Bourne, and Anthony Stewart here on the Wednesday edition. So tell us, about the mood. I think for the most part in Winnipeg, it's been rather quiet in terms of the storm the last little while, but what is the expectation of the market? How's the fan base feeling going into this series?
Yeah, it's interesting. The fan base had a lot of angst and anger and panic button pushing during that 9 out of 10 losses for sure. Interesting times. I mean, it's interesting. Expectations are so, you know, so interesting, guys. I mean, the Jets were a bubble team going into the year, but then when they started getting on a roll and, you know, battling the Leafs for first place, then the expectations were on the rise. And the Jets were one of those teams that didn't have a crisis of confidence during the year. I mean, they were the kings of the bounce back. They went, you know, I think around 40 games, they only lost consecutive games in regulation once. And then all of a sudden you have a seven-game skid, and but folks are starting to wonder what's happening. But there's definitely expectations on all these teams in the North. The Jets are no different since that run to the Western Conference Final in 2018. They haven't won a series, and they had two early exits. So there's great pressure, much like in Toronto with having not won a series since 2004. I do think there's a lot of pressure on the Jets to get something done. And if there's another early exit, I think all facets of the organization will be under review.
Is there any specific personnel you would expect to draw the McDavid punishment? I mean, sorry, assignment in the postseason?
Justin, I think a punishment might be a more apt description, and I think that was an unintentional intentional right there. I think, I mean, again, for the games in Winnipeg, I would suspect that Adam Lowry line that you touched on would draw the assignment, but we know that Dave Tippett has the last change. Mark Scheifele has gone head-to-head on numerous occasions with McDavid this year, and it hasn't gone well. I think at even strength, it was at 9 or 10 to 1 in favor of McDavid. So the Jets got their top line going last night with four goals, including 2-2 for Blake Wheeler, who's really elevated his game here with points in seven of the last eight. And kind of one of the big revelations coming out of last night, we knew that Blake was playing hurt earlier on in the year, but he was playing with cracked ribs, and that was part of the reason why some of those 5-on-5 struggles were apparent in the early going. So the Jets have to get their top line going. And I mean, you also touched on it, Nick. I think that Pierre-Luc Dubois will play a role in that shutdown process. I don't know that he'll be going head-to-head against McDavid like he did against Matthews, but I could see Dubois having an assignment of going up against Draisaitl if those guys are on separate lines. So it'll be very interesting to see how that all plays out. But that's how I see it going, at least out of the gate.
Paul Stastny played his 1,000th game last night. I'm a big fan of his game, and I don't think he gets enough headlines. How important is he to this Jets team, and especially in the playoffs, was they have aspirations going on a deep run?
Yeah, so he's been great for the Jets. And as you know, I mean, I think you'd be hard-pressed to find a guy in the NHL or anyone who's played against him that has a bad word to say about Paul Stastny. Just an incredible human being. He's such a connector. He has something in common with everyone in the roster. And there's the other part of it. I mean, 35 years old, but he's still a key contributor. I mean, he's been great. He's bounced between center and the wing. And I do think that, I mean, much like in 2018 when he was brought in at the deadline and had such a big role, including a huge night against the Nashville Predators in that Game 7 win, Paul Stastny is going to be one of those under-the-radar guys that helps not only the team improve, but his line mates be better. So he's been a great fit in his second tour of duty here with the Jets, and he's going to have an important playoff run as well. He's also done a nice job in his head-to-heads with Leon Draisaitl this year as well. So it'll be really interesting to see how the matchups go. And Stastny is an important part of that, you know, tertiary unit, as you mentioned. He's still in the top six.
Yep.
Well done. With Ken Weeb, the Jets and Oilers preparing for a first-round showdown here. Nick Alberga, Justin Bourne, and Anthony Stewart on Hockey Central. We're always looking for X factors this time of year. I think I look at this Winnipeg roster. Among the people I would think of has to be Andrew Kopp, having a great RFA season here, 15 goals, 39 points. How shocked are you at his development this year, now being 26? And B, what kind of role do you expect from him in the postseason?
Yeah, Kopp's been great for the Jets, and I wouldn't use the word shocked or surprised. I mean, this is a guy who at every level he's had to fight for everything that he got. He was a walk-on at Michigan, and with the U.S. national program, he kind of came on late, a bit of a late bloomer. I mean, a guy who was an incredible high school quarterback in Michigan, two-sport athlete. He's always been a kind of a leader on his team, a captain, and he's really kept pushing for top-six role. And again, he may start in the top-six with the way their units are right now. And I expect him to be an important contributor for sure. He's got the smarts to be able to play in the top six, and he also has that finishing ability is what he's really added to his game this year with those 15 goals, as you mentioned. He's a critical piece for the Jets for sure. And the other part about Kopp and Lowry is they're so integral to the penalty kill, which we know the Oilers' power play has been lights out this year, especially in the season series where the Jets were dominated to the tune of 7-2, and the Oilers have won the last six. So we know that special teams are critical. Andrew Kopp is part of that. And the other part of his game that's really evolved is his power play work on that second unit. Obviously, Nikolai Ehlers is the critical piece on that unit, but Kopp has been important to that second unit as well.
Ken, with the season behind us, how has the Winnipeg Jets experience been in the North Division? It's been, you know, there's so much excitement at first, and I don't want to say it petered out, but we all kind of got sick of each other at some point. Is that reflected in Winnipeg as well?
Yeah, I do think so. And again, that's not an excuse, but it's certainly part of the reasoning. I think they went through this lull late. I mean, they had the crazy month of March where they played 17 games. They're the only team, guys, in the division that has not played one road game in their own time zone, right? I mean, everybody else has a partner in the division except for Winnipeg. And I think there was a little bit of a taxing nature, and I do agree. I think these teams got sick of seeing one another. And the Jets saw an awful lot of Toronto and Edmonton late, so I think that should lead to some great intensity and maybe a little bit of hostility when the playoffs begin. And you guys touched on the beauty of the Leafs getting together with the Canadiens. I mean, the first meeting between the Jets and Oilers in the playoffs since 1990. Sure, there's a lot of emotional scars that might be being ripped open here for folks in Manitoba, but, I mean, let's get real. I mean, this is going to be an absolutely awesome series. Much like those series in the 80s, it's, you know, two of the best players in the National Hockey League on the Oilers, and the Jets have an opportunity to go head-to-head with them. And we know they've lost all six previous series, but they're going to be trying to rewrite a little bit of history here when they get back together in, you know, next week, whenever it is, Wednesday or Thursday or whenever the puck drops.
The one distinct advantage the Jets have over the Oilers is their fourth line with Thompson, Lewis, and Perreault. How great has their season been? And do they still have that streak of not being allowing a goal 5-on-5?
Yeah, Stewie, I mean, that line's been really good. Perreault's had to bump up in the lineup here, so he hasn't been with the fourth line. He may be back there once Ehlers is back, but I mean, I think they've had one allowed or one or two, but not that specific unit with Perreault and Thompson Lewis have not allowed a goal together, but the fourth line was on for one or two recently here this month. But yeah, they've been really solid, and as you mentioned, I mean, that's something that Paul Maurice hasn't really had the luxury of leaning on his fourth line very much during his tenure here. Their depth has been important, and Jansen Harkins has done a nice job jumping in on that role with Perreault moving up. But great season for Perreault specifically. I mean, here's a guy that was put on waivers for cap purposes early on in the year, really banged up last year, injury-riddled season. And again, he's a guy that's been really good for them. He's got great hands around the net. He's really gets the chaos going in terms of the creation on the forecheck. And he's a gamer, as you know, Stewie. I mean, he's the kind of guy that in the playoffs, when you have those kind of unsung heroes, I think Matthew Perreault will be getting involved in one of those double overtime games or one of those games that goes down to the wire.
You're a gamer as well, Ken. Appreciate your time. And again, encourage everybody to go check out Ken's piece on Paul Stastny right now on sportsnet.ca. Thanks so much for your time, Ken.
Yeah, my pleasure. Thanks for having me, guys. Jets and 7, by the way. I want to get in on the prediction.
Ooh.
Yes.
Love it. There you go.
I like it.
There you have it. Ken Wiebe, Sportsnet's Ken Wiebe, getting set for the Oilers and the Winnipeg Jets. So I ask you this question, Borny, we can start with you. Who has more pressure to win this series? Is it Edmonton or is it Winnipeg?
I think it's Edmonton. You know, there's just a lot of noise around the McDavid and Draisaitl prime age players, right? And it's like you don't want to let these years go by, and they want to play important hockey. They don't want another first round elimination in a year where it was supposed to be a soft division, quote unquote. So, yeah, pressure's on. You know, I feel everything is about star players. You got to keep McDavid happy, and he wants to play important hockey. So I don't think the same pressure's there for the Jets.
Yeah, I think the Oilers as well, too. And you look at the other sports, when you have the best players in the world, they're expected to carry you to the promised land, too. So I think there's a lot of pressure on McDavid and Draisaitl now to really take this next step in their development and really, you know, winning the conversation of who's the best players in the world. They get it done, obviously, in the regular season. Now they need to do it in the playoffs as well.
Because that's the thing, too, going forward, guys. I think we're all waiting for that signature run for Connor McDavid, throw Leon Draisaitl in that conversation. We saw from Crosby again the supporting cast a lot different early on in the careers for sure. But we're waiting for that signature moment. And I think from a Winnipeg perspective, that would scare the hell out of me, where it's like, you know, that McDavid and Draisaitl are going to get theirs, but ultimately it comes down to goaltending. And I think it comes down to the depth game. You know, how do you shut out guys like Ryan Nugent-Hopkins and Kyler Yamamoto? And how do you get an increase in production from guys like Kopp and Dubois and Wheeler and your big boys, right? I think, and Nikolai Ehlers' status, as Ken put it, I mean, he is skating. We'll see if he can come back. But I think there's just so many different combination of factors that could throw into this conversation. But I would not sleep on the Winnipeg Jets. I like Edmonton quite a bit. But I think depth could be the name of the game in this series, guys.
Yeah, this is not going to be a popular version of our show in Edmonton. There's a lot of Winnipeg Jets here.
Yeah.
but I think reasonably justifiably so. But I will say, I like your point about like the signature run from McDavid. If you look at the history of the NHL and star players, like they almost always get their cup. And of course, mm-hmm. there's exceptions. There's Eric Lindros. You know, there's a handful of guys. But almost always, the best players get their cup. You know, Ovechkin eventually found his way to his here in 2018. I think it was 2018. And I think McDavid yes. at some point will be doing the same thing. So it's kind of a sit around and wait here. Like, can the team get good enough that McDavid can do his part? It feels more to me like LeBron trying to win in Cleveland. Like, just give him enough. Give him enough around him, and I have no doubt he'll be able to do it. Is it this year? I'm skeptical, but it's going to happen at some point.
You would think. You would think. No, Stewie?
Oilers in seven. Let's go.
All right. We'll leave it there.
I forget.
I think you said 5.5.
I don't hold myself to any account, so it doesn't really matter what I say. So
just yelling out the window, essentially.
Oh, I was going to go pull up Stewie's predictions from earlier in the season on the King of the North because in general, and I wanted to leave with that, Stewie, like, you know, now that we've been through it almost 56 games, you know, what are your impressions on the North Division? Do you want to see it again, or is it something you want to change going into next season?
I would like to see maybe a splice where you see some more games yeah. versus, you know, each other. You know, I don't want to, I'd love to see Connor McDavid versus Auston Matthews more than twice a season or three times. I'd like to see them five or six times. But I think now what you can, everyone's safe to say is, you know, playing each other 9-10 times is a bit much. Playing three games in 4 nights against each other is a bit much. So find a way to splice it together with them playing teams in the U.S. I think it'd be very, very quality entertainment for sure.
I will say, by the way, the one thing that hasn't bothered me is the series of games. Mm-hmm. At no point have I been like, oh, great, it's this team again for the maybe third time's a bit much. But like, if you go baseball style and just go sets of games when you go play a team, I think that's totally fine. I actually think it helps you go into the second game, have a better sense of what you're up against and where the teams are at. And maybe a more fair look of where the teams are at when you get to play each other twice and teams get a chance to correct and stuff. So I haven't had a problem with that, and I hope they're able to continue that.
Unless it's an inconsequential three-game set between Calgary and Vancouver to wrap up the season. We'll hit the break. Exactly, and we'll wrap up this show after this. Nick Alberga, Justin Bourne, Anthony Stewart, Hockey Central, Sportsnet, 5-9 of the Fan. All right, getting set for Freddie Anderson's big return tonight, the penultimate game of this 56-game regular season for the Maple Leafs, Leafs and Sens from Kanata. 8 o'clock start, so note the start time and note the station. 680 News tonight. Might even call in Stewie for a weather update at some point in time. Yours truly, Gord Stellick. We'll have pre-intermission and post. Joe Bowen and Jim Ralph on the call, guys. Again, what's your expectation for Freddie Anderson? What do you want to see from the Maple Leafs in general? And how good has Ottawa been lately, Borny?
Yeah, they've been good. They've been a fun story the last third of the season or so. So, you know, it's interesting is it feels like, ah, Ottawa's a bottom team. This should be an easy start for Freddie. Like, that's not the case. This team still scores goals and does so at a pretty impressive clip from their top guys. So, yeah, he's got his hands full, and I just want to see him moving well and looking good, just enough to know that he can, you know, work his way better in the backup position to get playoffs started.
Yeah, and Ottawa has been one of the hotter teams in the division as of late, too, so they're not going to lay over and die. And I'm sure they want to play spoiler in ruining Freddie's playoff plans, too. So I think for Freddie, he's just got to keep it simple, make the routine saves routine. No muffins in from the point. I don't want to see any of those.
Yeah, just get through it, bottom line. I think it's just to have that depth in between the pipes. I know they have Big Save Dave as well in the three hole, but just to have that option in case something, you know, happens to Jack Campbell or he has a tough outing or something goes amiss, then you have the ability to go to a Freddie Anderson who, let's not forget about the fact that he has some demons to exercise in the postseason, guys. I thought he was pretty good against Columbus last year, but as you quoted, let in a couple muffins that, you know, was bad and tough to deal with, I think, from the Leafs, but they couldn't score goals in that series. But for Freddie's perspective, get through tonight and be an option at least, right, Borny?
Yeah, that's right. And his playoff performances have been unfortunate because he's had decent numbers. He's just had given up a couple of goals where you didn't need him to. You know, just the wrong time. And Stewie talks a lot about that. It's not necessarily how many. It's just like, you know, when. You can give up a goal in a reasonably close game, but when they've needed to fight back, he hasn't given them the save. So can he come up with some timely saves? He'll have to play well enough to earn big games, but I think he'll be able to do it if he does get in some playoff hockey.
Yeah, and he's a competitor too, and I think he wants to control the narrative on his legacy as well. And remember, he's a UFA at the end of the year this year, so he comes in, does what he needs to do. He's going to earn himself a couple more years at top dollar, because there's a lot of holes throughout the league, obviously here and throughout the league, that are needing top goaltenders. So if he comes in, does his job, he'll earn some security for the next few years at least, for sure.
And that's a really good point to wrap up the show, is money motivation. I'm putting together a piece for Sportsnet.ca about playoff pools. And that's one of the factors I look for in fantasy hockey in general, guys riding contract years and looking for strong finishes into the postseason. So don't sleep on that aspect either. And also of note tonight, that we could finally figure out this whole thing when it comes to playoff matchups. Again, we're just waiting on the West Division, Vegas and Colorado both in action. Nathan MacKinnon not playing tonight for the Avalanche, so we'll see if Vegas can wrap up that division. But guys, excellent job. Again, thanks so much for having me, and enjoy the postseason, okay?
Yeah, you too. Lots of good gambling talk ahead here at the playoffs next time around.
Yeah.
Go Leafs, go.
There we go. I was going to ask for that. Many thanks. You guys are legends. Thanks to Ken Weeb, Matt Marchese, Dylan Brown, Lance Kennedy. For Justin Bourne and Anthony Stewart, I'm Nick Alberga. Thanks so much for listening. And, of course, you've been listening to Hockey Central on Sportsnet 590 The Fan. Don't forget Leafs and Senators tonight on 680 News.